Talofa, kia ora, whakalofa lahi atu, kia orana.
Kia orana?
Need some pula vanaka?
I was waiting for kia orana.
We are back for another episode of the Cuckoo Talk podcast. Today we have joining us Paige.
Uamaki.
Uamaki.
Oh fuck, we fucked that whole thing up.
Should we start again?
This lady walked into our house.
This random bitch off the road.
With the Headhunters 88 jacket on.
Welcome.
Yeah, this so feels very like, I feel like under a microscope right now.
Do you know what's weird? We're having like normal conversation like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, I know.
And as soon as everyone sits down, there's like a weird...
We all turn into radio DJs.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I like it. Yeah, because this is the first podcast I've ever been a part of.
Awesome.
So thank you.
And you got a beautiful story too. Like we connected about a year ago. I'll say we're family now.
Yeah. We're like whangai whanau.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like we've been through a lot together and shared a lot of time and space together. I mean, like Gerhard and I have our hands marked by you.
Yo.
I was, you know, blessed to be at the birth of your beautiful baby as well. Mm. And just sharing time and space. Yep. The amount of times I come to your house and you feed me. And I stay for about an hour, typical Māori, and then I'm like, I've got to go, Paige.
I'll invoice you later.
But I just wanted to get you on here because I love the mahi that you're doing, the way that you show up, not only on social media, but like out in the world as well, watching your growth. And it's just always cool to see who the person is behind and then the story. So, who are you and where does your story start, sis? Oh,
thanks, guys. Where do I start? Born in Australia to a Māngaian father, Italian mother. They met Western Sydney.
Western Sydney's rulers.
Yeah, that's where you get these mixes, eh? Mm. Did some years there. Dad commits suicide in 98. So I was born in 94. Dad commits suicide in 98. Mum moved us back to Wainui. I say back because that's where Dad grew up. So he was born in Auckland to his parents there. And, mum's dad's from Italy. Mum's born in Australia. Moved us back to New Zealand. Did some years there. Moved back to, Central Coast area. And then made the move up to Brisbane and kind of started high school kind of thing. Knew who the fuck I was, really. Like, how do you when you're, like, a mixed-race person, you know?
How old were you when you moved over to Brizzy?
So I was about 11 or 12. So I haven't done a lot of years in New Zealand, but I feel like the healing that we did as little people after Dad's suicide was massive. So I've just got that connection with Wainui or Mata. Like, it feels like home. Like, when I go there, it feels like those mountains hug me, you know? And I don't have any memory of Dad. Like, it's all just been wiped. But I feel him. That's what I know of my dad. Wainui, and then the house that we lived at in Wainui, Castlereagh Street, with Nanny and Granddad, was a house like he did a lot of years in when he was alive. So
and what was it like for you growing up here, you know, like even Gerhard and I talked about the in-betweener and mixed race and whatever language you want to use, but how
well
was it for you?
Mum remarried a Samoan man. He's Samoan Dutch. Beautiful man. Can't talk too much about Anthony or I'll start crying. Like, I love that guy. He did so much for me. It's almost like, and I've been told this by mediums that I've seen, it's almost like Dad's suicide was a gift. And that sounds like a big statement to make, but my biological father just would not have had the tools to raise us how Anthony did. Like, Anthony came into our lives and he grounded us, you know, and he grounded Mum. And not a lot of people can put up with my mum shit. And I do tell Mum, like, you're punching, you know. But obviously not, but kind of. I just have, two parents who, love us. A mum who's kind of, still finding herself as well. And like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but
not really.
Yeah, I guess that's what this is, though. Yeah.
Because we even had a conversation with our mate Jim. We were talking about our parents' mental health and how hard it is when we like awaken to ourselves or, you know, start to heal ourselves. And then we're trying to build a relationship with our parents who are still trying to figure their shit out. Like the conflict that it can bring and like so also like misunderstanding.
Yeah. I can actually, I remember, I can pinpoint moments in time where I've seen my parents not as my parents but as people. Like, and I started to have those little moments of awareness from probably around 15, 16, where I started to see not her not as mum and not him as dad but as Anthony and as Claudine, and they're humans, you know, with faults, and they got their own shit to like sort out, and then we're just kind of like mixed up in that, you know. But yeah,
especially when you have a baby yourself, like, you know, become a mama and you're like, I'm so sorry,
I'm forever changed. Like I'm gonna be in like forever debt to motherhood. Like, I feel like it's the biggest, most transformative journey that a woman could ever embark on, if they let it be, like if they allow that, because you can go one or two ways, can't you? Like, and you choose if you like what you want to do. Like, I was talking on my, I don't know if you were watching my whole live the other night on Instagram, but that journey through that pregnancy was like, well, like when I did that mental health kind of like a score chart, and I scored a 2. And
that's the one where you go to the hospital and they ask you questions.
So I did this with my midwife.
Okay.
Like, and just like the growth I had from scoring a 2 on like a mental, like I was suicidal when I was pregnant. And my relationship with my family wasn't very good. And that's all I'll say about that. Like, we'll just leave that over there. But yeah, like it's motherhood has... it has a way of going, well, come on then, like, let's go. Don't dwell there. Like, you got someone else to live for now and provide for and love for. And you're only going to be able to do that if you pick yourself up, pick your shit up, get it together and keep on going, kind of thing, you know? Yeah. Massive.
I find with parenthood, it's like staring at this reflection kind of thing, and you see all your faults, you see all this bullshit that you do. And then you're like, holy hell, I've got to raise this baby. I've got to make sure this baby doesn't have any of my fucked upness in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I left that in pregnancy. Like, I was so scared to raise a girl. Like, and just my OCD thoughts, my anxiety thoughts of like, oh, she's going to be sexually abused. How am I don't have the tools to raise a girl and protect a girl. And like, there were like, my panic attacks were unreal. Like, I'd be driving 36, 37 weeks pregnant on the highway and I'd have to pull over, get my shoes off, put my feet on the grass on the side of the motorway, and then get back in the car feeling a little bit more calmed down, drive to some car park, and Ethan would have to leave work and come and meet me there and calm me down and drive me home. Like, it was almost like, it was like a paralysis, like panic. And that was all because I was just scared to raise a girl. You know, yeah, hectic. But then now I've had her, I'm like, fuck, I could do this. Like, anyone touches my girl, I'll fuck them up. You know, like, I've got you. You all of a sudden have these eyes at the back of your head. You know, I feel like parenthood or motherhood, fatherhood's one of those things where like you underestimate yourself because you know the task is massive. And then you do it and you're like introduced to this new side of yourself you never knew was there. But you only can know it's there until you're there.
Yeah. Mm.
You know? Yeah. You can't ever prepare for it. But when you're there, you're like, cool,
you can read all the books, go to all the prenatal classes that you want. Yeah. It's not until you're holding that baby, you're like, nothing's touching, nothing. I'm going to do everything in my power that nothing bad happens to this kid.
Yeah. I'm pretty lucky though, because I doubted myself during my pregnancy, but never once through pregnancy birth, postpartum, have I ever doubted my partner as a father? And like, I remember we made that joke when I was in labor. Like, Ethan, do you have kids somewhere else? Because it's kind of like you're a pro at this. Like,
he was like, he was a doula,
bro.
Like, I was supposed to be the doula. He held that space. Why are you taking
over my job? Yeah, far out. Like, crazy.
Even that, you can never prepare for something like birth. And until you're in that situation, like the way that he was able to step up and hold you, and also how you held yourself as well, you know, boss. It was really beautiful.
Yeah.
And then what unfolded from that was even more growth. Crazy, you know, you're on this high and you're like, this is me. Yeah. And then, bro, fuck's the only beginning.
Yeah. Ready to pump out another baby. Let's do it.
Remember, you're like, I'm ready. I'm like, really, bro? Like,
yeah.
I'm still tired.
Yeah. And Tupuna were like, no, Paige. Let's carry.
How was that? Because I know you have like a taonga that you've created. Was that from your own experience?
Well, back in 2018, and I've had this conversation with you a few times. Back in 2018, I had this idea to do a deck of affirmation cards. And I never knew what they were going to be about. I tried to get my sister on board, but I kind of felt like she wasn't really into it. Like, she didn't really get that visual or that energy I was feeling when I was explaining it. So I kind of just left it. And in walks this beautiful wahine into my life, Vanessa.
Oh, you're talking about me?
Yeah, you.
keep going.
It's like, who is this bitch? Well, I remember on one of our first appointments, when I was your client and you were my doula, you were talking to me about your affirmation cards for sexual trauma. And I was like, oh, wait, how did you do that? Because I've been sitting on this seed for so long, but felt too scared and too anxious, or like, I there's so much to you when you don't know how to do something, you feel overwhelmed by all the things you think you need to do to get it done. And that's where I was like, wait, you know what, I'm gonna ask her, where did you get them printed, how did you go about it? And I remember I asked you heaps of questions, and I didn't ever want you to feel like I was imitating what you were doing. So I went to a family friend who owned a printing company up here, and talked to him about what I wanted. And although he gave me a cool discount, it was still an arm, leg and a titty. And I'm like, that just didn't feel right. Went to another printing company. They couldn't do what I wanted to do. So I was like, okay, maybe I am going to have to approach the people that print your cards. And Shana.
Yeah, Shana's amazing.
She's fucking cool.
Yeah.
And I love that woman. Like, text, call her, anything. She's like an auntie. Yeah.
They're called Synergy Printing in Brisbane. Anyone who's wanting to get printing, especially like cards and stuff, hit her up. Like, send Shana an email. Give her my name, so maybe they'll give me a discount on my next order.
Yeah, mention my name too. it was almost like a tohu that when I contacted Synergy Printing, the ladies were so lovely. And although at the beginning they didn't really understand my vision, they still respected it and wanted to do it properly for me. And I think it wasn't until Shana had read through my story and the affirmations, I felt an energy shift in her, like, not towards me, but about this as a, it's not just a product. It's like, no, this is going to shift things for people. So pretty much I've done a deck of affirmation cards for miscarriage and loss. And it's pretty much for vaine and tane, so men and women who have experienced loss and miscarriage, whether that be chemical pregnancy, like early miscarriage, quarter way, I guess, like I was nearly 4 months of my first pregnancy, all the way up to stillborn. And I did make sure that these affirmations weren't a little too triggering for especially women who have experienced birthing their stillborn pepe, because it is different. An 8-week miscarriage and birthing a pepe who's stillborn, there is, it's a little more layered. Mm. And the trauma, I mean, I know you can't compare trauma, but it's just different. However, I wanted to make sure that within this deck of cards, it could penetrate women who had experienced it at all stages. So I did reach out to a few women who I knew had experienced it at all stages, sent them the draft, like just an email of, you know, my story, how you can use the cards and what the affirmations were. So I did 29 affirmations. I don't know why I did 29. I just liked that number at the time and I was like, just roll with that. And I received really positive, beautiful feedback. And one thing I really saw from it was different women were like resonated with a different affirmation, which was really beautiful. So these affirmations come from the wisdom that I've gained through 3 miscarriages. So the first miscarriage I had was a bit of a rough one. Obviously, first it being my first pregnancy, me and Ethan were not in a good space mentally, physically, our living environment, financially. We were just young, you know, burning our money on stupid shit. Like, you know, you talk about getting better and being better, but you're not actually making any moves to do and be better. And that's what we were like. And this happened, it kind of like woke us up. So pretty much it turned into a cancer scare. I had to go after they removed Pepe. They took the body weight to do tests. And I still feel very pody and mummy that I did not ask for my baby's body. I'm still dealing with releasing that, and that was start of 2019. I just wish that I could have just held him and given him an ummah and a hug and released him in the way that our people tangi, you know. And I felt like it was shame because I consciously remember getting reeled in and about to be put under. I was gonna ask and it was gonna come out of my, but I stopped myself because I felt like they were gonna laugh at me or something. And that's just myself, like, but yeah, not that I want there to be a next time, but if something does happen like that again, it's definitely something I'll ask for. And if this ever happens to a woman that's listening to this podcast, take it from me, ask for your Pepe and give your Pepe the ceremony that Pepe deserves, you know, because that's a soul, although it didn't enter this physical realm. Because I mean, I have a pretty solid belief system on when we're hapu, baby's soul has chosen to come through us, and I feel like baby's soul comes into their body and leaves, much like a death experience would be. It's not just like baby's in there from the get-go. I feel like baby comes in and leaves, comes in and leaves. And then during that birth process, that's when Pepe is in there and ready to come into this world permanently in that body. I just believe that give Pepe tangi, you know, and release it, because that's really going to help you on your healing process. And if you don't have Pepe in physical form after you've lost him or her, do something for them. Like, just be ceremonial, because it's going to benefit you and your mental health, and it's going to benefit other women or tāne around you seeing what you're doing with that kind of grief. You know, because it is something that's not really talked about. Mm. You kind of experience a miscarriage and the hospital goes, here's a pamphlet. Mm. It's like, oh, thank you so much. I'll use that as a fucking bookmark. Like, I'm not going to read that. I get it, but it's almost like a here, bye kind of thing. Like, there's nothing in between. So then I fell pregnant with Amalia about 8 months later. But that 8 months before Amalia was born, was a really rough 8 months for me and my partner. So he had lost his dad's mum, and then we lost Pepe, then we lost his sister's 12-year-old son, and then we lost his mum's mum. And it was like, oh, it was just a lot. Like, it just woke us up out of our shit. And then September rolls around, end of September, and positive pregnancy test. Like, wasn't even trying to fall pregnant. And, yeah, pregnant with Amalia, had a rough pregnancy, blah, blah, blah. Had the most beautiful birth. I really felt like it would have been a lot different had you have not been there for Ethan and I. Like, people don't really understand what a doula is unless they know what a doula is. Mm. And I feel like everybody needs a doula. Even if they've got their mum in the room, like, they need a doula to be that advocating voice for them when they're busy doing birthing a fucking child. Mm.
Like, should be your only one job.
Yeah, that's right. Like, you don't need to be talking to this nurse trying to scare you or this doctor trying to scare you, like, because that's what they do. Then that's what they were trying to do to me. Like, oh, we can't guarantee baby's all right. Like, the heart rate's really inconsistent. So we're going to have to, you know, put the needle in the head. Well, tell me to get into a better position. Mm. Like, and how many times did we tell them all to leave the room so we could make a decision? Yeah. We didn't even need to make a decision. We knew what the decision was, but just, can you just like give us some space, because you're annoying and you've been asking me the same question for hours and hours. Mm. But can you believe that was 12 months ago?
No.
Next month?
Yeah, I'm still in denial that Amalia is like turning one soon.
That little shit has 7 teeth. She is still on the titty and she bites my nipples. And when she does, she smiles and she looks up at me and with those big brown eyes, and she thinks she's so funny. And when I tell her no, she thinks that's the go ahead and to have another bite. Like, she's so sassy. Like, I was trying so hard to have a Taurus baby, but I had a Gemini. And I was scared because Geminis are like split personality. And like, because she's coming into her personality now, I'm like, oh, you're a fucking Gemini. No, she is, oi. Because, you know, we've recently got a new puppy. And her name's Ina. And I named her Ina after the half woman, half shark legend of Mangaia. And she brought a Tatatal to Mangaia. And it's really cool because this dog's so chill. And although puppies should be up biting everything, chewing everything, that puppy legit, she'll be all excited if clients walk through the house. But as soon as I'm tattooing and that machine's on, she's asleep right at my feet the whole day. Yeah, so she's kind of like, yeah, my little sidekick. But there's been some yelling and some smacking on the nose since we've had Ina, like for Ina, you know, pissing discipline, and shitting discipline inside. Yeah, got to let him know, like, who's boss. She's not paying any rent. So, like, obviously, if you shit in my house, like, I'm going to give you a little bit of a hiding.
A twack.
Yeah. So Amalia's seen that, and now she knows how to yell at someone. She'll even – this little girl, she'll wake up out of her sleep, and she'll, like, have her little puffy eyes half open, look around with her spiky bed hair, and she'll go, Ina! No, Ina, and then fall back to sleep. Like, this little girl is dreaming about smacking and telling Ina off. Like, she is just, she's so been here before. She's an old soul, 100%.
She is.
Like, you tell her how to, like, you teach her how to do something once, and she knows she's got it. Yeah, she's cool. Brushes her hair, rubs her powder in after the bath, turns on and off the light switches, everything. She's so smart.
I'm still like looking after my 13-year-old. Make sure you brush your teeth, boy.
Yeah, brush your hair, boy.
It was funny when we got pregnant with our first. One of the first things my dad told me was like, make sure you get the kids a dog.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what do you mean get the kids a dog? I got to look after them. He goes, no, you got to get them to look after something apart from themselves, just to like to have to put something before themselves, especially at that young age.
Yep.
Yeah. It's really important once the kids like do get a pet and everything, as much as they hate having to feed it and clean up after it,
yeah,
they get like a little bit of responsibility. They're like, oh, I can keep something alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hard out. No, that's a good way to look at it.
Mm.
One of my main reasons for getting a dog is because, like, I don't know, just so she's not scared around dogs. Mm. Because, like, we're a dog family. Mm. And, yeah, dogs are just, yeah, they become a part of the family. But that, I guess that's just a bonus, eh?
Mm.
Yeah. But it's also, like, love and care for animals. Mm. Like, that's massive, like, love and care for them.
But and then at dinner time, animals, we'll eat them.
Really?
I hated animals. I'm not hated, but I didn't know how to care for them like how you would care for them.
Mm.
They were something that just guarded the house.
Yeah.
Oh, it okay. was something like, it's unsafe. You'll hear yeah. someone, the dogs, like it was never sit on the couch. Like it was on a chain outside
yeah,
in
yeah,
the cold.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. yeah.
My auntie's in yeah. Samoa. So my auntie, she lived by herself. So she'll have a dog chained up at her front door and a dog chained up at her back door. And these dogs are just on chains all day.
Yeah,
I know, like, fun. Over here it's like animal cruelty, but over there yeah. it's like security.
Safety.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah,
I'm,
yeah.
you know, top of the food chain. You
yeah, that's right. After me, I've actually definitely seen a change in Ethan's family around dogs since we've had Ina, because she's so lovable and cuddly and she's chilled. Like, she'll just want to come and snuggle with you and fall asleep. So, like, she gives that love that like, everybody wants. And she's like, she's needy of you and it feels good.
Mm.
And they love it. Like, Ina just stayed there for a night all day. So 2 days and one night. And when I walked in the door to go and pick her up, she's saying, she went around, literally, everyone was sitting on the couch. She went around to Papa D. She gave him a little lick. Went to Leilani, Ethan's sister, gave her a lick goodbye. Went to Solomon, Ethan's brother, gave her a lick. And then went straight to the front door. Mm. Like, you know, she's just like, it's just cute, like, yeah. Anyway.
Bro, our cat best fucking dog. The worst thing, scratches on everything.
Fuck cats.
You want to, like, hug it.
I used to. I used to be like that, but I hated cats.
Yeah.
Then we finally got that guy, and I was like.
No, you know what? You want to know why I hate cats?
Why?
In Wainui, I don't know about where yous grew up in New Zealand, but in Wainui, we were in this house on Kaponga Street. And wild cats would get up in the roof and that mimi smell, that cat mimi yeah. smell, that feral cat. And I'm like, I fucking hate cats.
Yeah.
So that's why I hate them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're unpredictable. And it's like, come and love me. Come yeah, and give me kisses true. When I
that's
walk in.
That's what I kind of like, because I'm like, I'm not the most like touchy-feely person. Yeah, so yeah. when they don't want, I'm like, cool, I respect your boundary. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I hear you, pussycat. Yeah. You don't want to be touched, sweet
yeah.
as.
Yeah.
Hey, just wanted to touch on... like to go back a little bit and like speaking about grief and sometimes we don't have that opportunity to grieve our pepe. Like, I know that's something that you offer with these markings and you're a tattoo
yeah.
artist, and you offer, would you say, like, intuitive markings, or what yeah, would you say they
so
are?
So I would explain it as like spirit to skin markings, and that sequence of words just came to me intuitively, because it's like, fuck, it is legit from the spirit to the skin. And it's just about, it's kind of multifaceted with the mahi I do, because what I want to do is I want to create a ceremony for people, which I naturally do using salt water and karakia ceremony, you know, create that sacred or tapu space where they can feel comfortable to drop into whatever they need to drop into, to either shed something before they receive their markings, or have realizations, or just, even if it's just time away from home if they're a mum, you know what I mean? Like, anything. But people will generally get something more out of what I do than just the tattoo itself. Because, again, it is a ceremony. It is offering, if you want to transition or transform after this marking, the option is there for you to do that. But it takes intention. And it takes awareness, yeah. And it takes wanting to, that willingness to want to step into more consciousness, if that makes sense mm-hmm. at all. So with my artwork, I've been a big, like, I've kind of, and it kind of, I guess it weaves in with, like, my journey with my identity as a mixed race person. So... went to Kohanga in Wainui, lived with my Cook Island grandparents. Mum remarried a Samoan, and we moved to Australia. So I've got all these different influences around me. When I was darker, younger, I was a lot darker. And as I grew up, my features become more, I guess, pointier, I would say. My skin's not as dark as it used to be. Like, people thought I was Aboriginal, like Indigenous Australian, when I moved back to Australia. Because I was just dark, big dark eyes, dark hair. And then, like, you go through high school with all these Islander Aussies, right? And I mean that by, like, they may have been born in New Zealand but moved over here at a really young age, and they act different. Mm. And here we are, who grew up in New Zealand or spent time over there enough to know and how to act, how to speak to teachers with respect. Like, we were just taught that. Mm. That was just like a must do. But schooling and the way Islanders and Māoris held themselves over here was just different. And I guess that's because they weren't grounded, maybe. New Zealand grounds you. You don't have to prove anything when you're over there. When you're over here, you're like, got to prove that you're, whether that means putting an accent on or like pretending you're from somewhere you're actually not, or I don't know, repping gangs you don't know shit about. Just people did that in high school. And just navigating through that, and then kind of having a real hatred towards religion and like Christianity. And then that kind of went into like feeling hatred towards white people for what they did to all Indigenous communities, like to our tūpuna. And, you know, as I studied more about like our history, because that's how I feel I'd learned more about myself, through studying history of like my island and everything like that. And like even learning that a boat of 200 Rarotongans was taken from Raro to America as black slaves. And that's not common knowledge. And that, like, fueled hate in me towards white people. And then I came to this realization, like, hey, you have white ancestry. Mm-hmm. Not the colonizer kind, but white-skinned ancestry. And it's like, that sounds a bit like self-hate to me. Like, you need to get comfortable with yourself, because this isn't a conversation about skin color and drawing lines. It's about, okay, what are our Indigenous ceremonies that can offer healing to everybody? Like, that's one thing that I always total call. So if you're taught something by someone from a whole space, that person should be able to go there and teach whoever they want about it with the same heart and intentions. And that's my driving force with my markings. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you come from, what color you are. If I can sit down in Vananga with you, kōrero with you, talk with you, share stories with you, mark you in the way that whatever flows through me, and I can teach you about these markings and it can bring you peace and you healing, then that's why our tūpuna gave us these ceremonies in the first place. Mm. And I feel like in this industry, especially tattooing, there's two different kinds. There's the traditionalist, and then there's the people who are more contemporary boundary pushing artists. So I'm talking specifically in the Pacifica Māori community. And we're seeing a lot of cultural appropriation, this and that. Mm. And I'm just like, I don't really resonate with any of that kōrero, because it's like, okay, it's different if like some random white guy named Steve bought these. Poor Steve. Oh, fucking Steve, eh? Steve-o. Bloody Steve-o. If I heard about him. So like, it would be different if Steve bought some rubbish fucking greenstone imitations from Alibaba and wanted to sell them and call them Māori, blah, 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 like, and sell them and use that as, like, that's different. But that whole kōrero, if you don't fuck a papatū, then don't touch and don't make money off it. Nah, bro. Our tūpuna didn't live like that. Like, our Moana Nui people, we're the same people with the same worldview, just on different islands. and we come together and we share our gifts. Like, and something that can support that argument would be the Tongans going to Samoa to receive their tawaka. Like, so my partner's from a village called Kanakupolu, and it was named after Upolu because they used to travel from Tonga to Upolu and receive their tawaka from Samoan to Funga. And it's like, oh, so we're, is that cultural appropriation? Like,
exactly.
Like, what are we really, are you just projecting your mamai? Mm. You know, and that's something that my friend said, and I was like, fuck yeah, people are just so angry at the white man. And I get that. Mm. There's definitely, and like, that's a big statement to make, and I understand that, but it's like, okay, let's reel it in. And let's, like, really look at ourselves and the mahi that we provide for our people. If we do that with love, with good intention, and with, intention to heal and give, then our culture will never be taken from us. Like, step outside that, because that whole korero is colonized.
100%.
Yeah. So, what was your question again?
There was no question, bro. Keep going.
No, that was really interesting, because, like, I kind of resonate with you, like, mm-hmm. the way that you're speaking about this. How, like, on, I guess on social media nowadays, everyone's about the white man, colonized thought, colonized way of thinking.
Yeah, like, I was one of those people.
Cultural appropriation.
Mm. Yeah.
But, like, a lot of the time, these people stop at the anger, you know? They don't go back into the histories. Like, people don't understand, like, Tonga ruled Samoa for, like, 300 years, man. The Tongan kings and, like, royal family were looked at as gods.
Yeah.
So Tongans couldn't even touch them. They had to bring Samoan workers over to pretty much do everything for
them.
Yeah,
don't the royal Tongans, like, literally speak another dialect, and they literally, like... If you're not from that royal family, not the dance crew, like the royal, like Tonga one, they speak a different dialect than they, like the common Tongans don't speak that, you know, like, and that's like, that's a real state. When you really think about that, like that's some deep shit right
and
there.
And this shit is old.
Yeah.
And you know, like a lot of people are too worried about.
Being correct.
No, not being correct. They're too worried about their shine being taken away from them. Realize. They don't realize how old this shit is. And not only that, they don't realize how big the world is.
Yeah. Mm. So what I really feel right now, and this may change because like we're ever changing, and like I'm the type of person, like, don't hold shit against me that I said 2 years ago, because I'm a different person.
Even last week.
Exactly, like, exactly. Mm. Even, like, in the car, Ethan, like, don't bring that stuff up again. You will drive me far. Release me. That's the past. But, like, he's going to laugh at it. Is he? He's going to laugh at this when he listens to it. But, like, what I'm trying to say is we're living at a point in time where we were meant to be here. Like, there are so many strong, especially wahine, vaine, teine, whatever you want to call it, who are really, like, they're advocating for our culture. They're advocating for the arts, the Pacifica Māori arts. They're advocating for the healing, for the ceremony. That's beautiful. And that's what's needed right now, not this big angry conversation about who can do what and who can be where, because I don't feel like you can fight fire with fire. Like if we're really at a point now where change can be done, the change that needs to be done is the change within ourselves, because I really feel like this is a fight between spirit and ego right now. And it's like, well, what are our people going to choose? Also on that, just because we were colonized doesn't mean our traditions, or our ceremony, I should say, were set in stone, like, and as soon as we were colonized and nothing can be changed. Mm-hmm. So it's like when people see changes to like indigenous art, they think it's wrong and disrespectful, but it's like, but like, if our tūpuna weren't colonized and they did interact well with the white man, and the white man did trade their tools or this or that with them, they would have taken that on and adapted it to how they saw fit. So trust the artists in our community and know that we are tapping into the source, mm-hmm. and we are really guiding the taonga of our people in a positive and spiritual and healing way. Like, that's something that I've always wanted to really put out. But honestly, I do get a bit scared on social media. And obviously, I'm going to tell my peeps that I jumped on here for a podcast and they're going to have a listen and have a yarn about it, whatever. But I mean, I have been one to be a little bit scared of putting out, because I am very, I think away, and that's the way I think. I love accepting different views, and then if I resonate with it, I'll adapt it to mine and kind of go through life like that. Like, I'm pretty open-minded, but when it comes to stuff like this, it's like, nah, just do the right thing. It's not about just you. It's not about just me. It's about us and what's going to help us, and then what's going to help, like, stop thinking of us as, oh, their tūpuna and we're their mokopuna. Start thinking about our mokopuna and us as their tūpuna, and what mahi can we do now that's going to set up our mokopuna, you know? And I feel like we're going to set them up by doing the mahi inside ourselves, and we can access that mahi in a safe way through the ceremony that our tūpuna left behind. Whether you want to access that through receiving your pea, your kowai, your mataora, your puhoro, your, the list goes on. Like, access these ancestral ceremonies and have it be a gateway for your healing, and not look at it as, you don't speak Samoan, why have you got your pea?
Oh, you're not worthy.
You don't speak this, why are you? Oh no, but do you know the responsibility you have right now? Like, fuck off with that. Like, that belongs in the 90s. Let's leave it there.
That's also, you know, a colonized view that you need 100%. To tick certain boxes in order to receive something that is your birthright.
Like, that's right. That's right. And like, it's this whole, I mean, even the indigenous, like, Australians, like, the way they were, what's that word, assimilated?
Yep.
Yeah, like, into a white society by the kids being stolen and then bred with white, so their kids would be more white, and so on and so forth.
And also, like, the assumption that every single Aboriginal is an Aboriginal. They didn't realise that Australia is just huge place. One side could never have met these other Aboriginals on the other side. It's just like, you're the same thing. You're basically an Aboriginal.
It's like going up to a Tongan and saying he's Samoan or something. I mean, same, but different. Like, same, but different, you know? Like, it's like going, oh, Asian people. Well, actually, there's Taiwanese, there's Japanese, there's, you know what I mean? Like, but then again, it's just like, why can't we just see people for being people, you know? Like,
because we got to be special, bro.
Anyone would want to see as Māori, bro. I'm special as. Call me a person.
Smelly Māori. <Rafa. laughs>
I think everything you've highlighted is, like, it's an uncomfortable conversation to hear on the other side. But I think these kinds of conversations need to be had where people are feeling, like, uncomfortable, where people are feeling, like, sweaty, where they are maybe questioning their beliefs in some way. Because I don't think it's possible to keep going and, like, generating so much anger within yourself. Like, not only for the collective, but, like, bitch, you're going to fucking burn out. Like, you're going to get tired.
Like, okay, so how many more years are we going to talk about colonization? Are we going to be talking about it longer than, like, how long it's been happening? Like, what's the go here? Like, I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow when we stop speaking and start doing. But but then again, like, I totally understand that there's different people for different roles in our community. So I'm not the type of person that'll go out on a march with a sign and chant. Like, I'm the type of person that'll create a ceremony, a safe space for people to come into my whare, receive something that's going to hopefully help make some kind of change in their life, big or small. That's the change and perspective that I want to come from. So, like, in saying what I'm saying, I'm not saying, like, stop fighting for the rights. Of course I can do that, but it's just so easy to sit on social media and just, like,
screenshot people's shit.
It's like, the fact that we need a break from social media says enough. Like, there's just, and that's not to say that you can't, you know, Like, listen to me now, like, trying to not to offend people. Mm. Like, oh, you know, just because I'm saying this, it doesn't mean that. You know what I said? What I fucking said. Mm. Take it or leave it, love it or lick it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Mm. Like, if this isn't your conversation, it's not yours, go and get yours somewhere else.
Change the channel.
Yeah. Exactly. Close your eyes.
But leave a review first before you go.
But the thing is, like, we didn't have this available to us back in the day. You were basically fed the media that this is how you should think. This is how you should think.
Yeah.
Now the information has been made available to us. Mm. And it's like, oh shit, I can decide on what I want to listen to. I can decide on what I want to represent.
Mm.
I can decide on, you know, the channels I want to see, the people I want to interact with. It's so much better now. Whereas, like, I think that's what makes it so hard to conversate with our olds. Because they've been brought up a specific way. Yeah. And if you question that shit.
Very streamlined way.
But it's also like, if you question that, you're questioning their whole state of being.
Yeah.
They're like,
yeah.
I've lived my life like this. Who the fuck are you to question me?
Yeah.
It's really. Yeah.
And I feel like the thing that we need to really start putting into play, and it's something that I've really come to terms with and I just need to do, people are going to live the way they want to live. Like, even like racists, like even slightly racist comments you've received, because, like, for example, you know, I have these facial markings. It's like, oh, just leave them. I don't need to educate them. Mm. Like,
you don't need to explain yourself.
Yeah. And it's because, like, I'm just who I am, whether you like it or not. Like, but then again, if I have the energy and they're open for chat, I have a chat. I love a chat. Like I said before, I love a chat. Like, I gag for a chat. But, like, I don't know. Like, just leave the negative where the negative is and just be more positive, because eventually, like, you know, the sun comes out and the darkness is gone. You know what I mean? To, like, put it in a nutshell. And it's like, even when, like, you receive, like, a shitty comment on the street and then people go and quickly put that on their Instagram, it's like, ugh, leave it on the street. That's where it belongs. Mm-hmm. Like, other people don't need to read it and, like, be triggered by it. Like, yeah, I don't know. I'm just a bit like that. Like, I have received some remarks about the marking on my chin. And I really don't give a flying fuck about what people have said. Therefore, I don't need to put it on social media. Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, don't feed it. Don't feed the fucking demon.
Because it is an entity. Mm. And an entity, I mean, it's an energy. And, like, if you're going to talk about that energy by, you know, talking about that same negative situation, you're actually giving that entity more of, like, a gravitational force and pull, and you're making it bigger energetically because you're putting your energy into it. Mm. And something that, like, who was I talking to? Oh, probably one of my clients. I was talking about, like, when she gonna go and get her kawaii. And she's going to head back to New Zealand and get it now that the bubble is up and running. And I pointed out, like, it's not a you thing. It's about the culture. Like, it's, you know, it's going to affect you individually, of course. Mm. But it's also, like, don't make this decision just for you. Make it for the greater good kind of thing. And that's one of the things I really love about Pasifika Māori tradition ceremony. It's not about the individual ego. It's about the group collective and its happiness, you know, and it's moving forward and it's healing.
Celebration.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And what was I saying? So with these, like, negative comments, when you receive them about your marking, for their markings, especially if they're ancestral. So ancestral meaning, like, generations of women before you wore what you have on your chin, right? So when you embody moko kowai, when you receive it, you're taking on the energy that the wahine before you held and placed into this taonga that you now wear on your face. And whatever, you have an opportunity to inflict change on that taonga, whether it be healing or a step back. So then when your mokopuna receive kowai, because they've seen their nanny Ness had her kowai, I want to receive my kowai and feel close to my nanny Ness. Well, they're going to receive your energy through it, You know what I mean?
Bro, you got some bomb ass energy coming, kids.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's right.
No tattoos for me, mum.
But like, we need to be aware of that. So not just the high you get on once you receive your markings, because you're like, you feel like the man, like you feel like the one, like you feel cool, like you feel awesome. A negative comment could not stop you from being happy. But it's when you feel like shit and you get comments or you're put into these uneasy situations where you've got to dig deep and feel proud about your facial markings. That's the energy. That's the energy that's going to be stored. I mean, all of it is, but that's the energy you really need to work on harnessing. Like the words that come from your mouth, that energy that you let slip past this taonga, it's going to affect who wears it next. But that's the way I look at it, you know, because as a tātoto artist, like these change you. There's something about them that change you. And they change you forever. You can't go back to the person you were when you didn't have your kowai, for example, or you didn't have your beta, because you've gone through a transformation kind of thing.
It's an initiation, really.
Hard. Yeah. And you choose what you want to be initiated into these days. We don't live how our tūpuna live. Let it go. We don't live 400 years ago, 1,000 years ago, whatever. We live right now in 2021. And if you want to receive your moku kowai because you're a new mum and you want to symbolize that, as that journey, fucking go and get your moku kowai. Get your whānau's approval, go and sort it out. You know what I mean? Like, we got to stop waiting for, like, this whole to not offend people or, like, you know. Yeah, because that's massive, eh?
Yeah. You're not ready yet. Maybe you shouldn't do that. Oh, what's this person going to think? What's that person going to think? I know for my family, because of my they grew up in Samoa and they are Afrikaans kind of thing. They were born and bred over there.
Yeah.
So for them, they were almost separate to the Samoans. Mm. So they were looked at different. And then for my dad, you know, for their son going out and getting it done, they're like, but we're not like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, sorry, bro, but I am, you know? Yeah. Like that's, and I always hear, like, when I spoke to people before I got it, I was like, how was it, you know? How was it getting it? Was it sore? And they're like, oh, it was more so the journey afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like how you got to hold yourself. You can't forget about, like, the way you're acting. You got to live to a different, you've got a different standard.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
It changes everything.
Yeah, hard out. And when you see another man with his better, you have like this.
There's a connection, man.
Yeah, it's a brotherhood. And same as when I see, you know, wahine who wear kowai. Mm. Oh, I see.
Yeah, hard.
Although this isn't Māori kowai that I wear on my chin, there's something about facial markings, especially because it's a big statement, and it takes, I'm not going to say balls, I'm going to say it takes a fucking cervix to wear one of these, eh?
Big juicy ticket to hold
it. It takes a 10 centimeter dilated cervix to wear a fucking facial marking. It does, like, it's not something that anybody could just do. It takes preparation. Even though I didn't do that preparation as well as I should have, because when I was on the bed receiving it, I was like, I don't know, I want to get this. Two, can I look in the mirror before you tattoo it? Oh, do people do that? And he goes, oh no. And I'm like, oh, sorry, I'm gonna go look in the mirror. And then I'm like, fuck, what if I look like that white woman that that the have you ever seen that woman, American settler? She was kind of abducted, I guess, in a nice way, by the indigenous Americans, the Native Americans, and they tattooed her face. Oh, wow. Yeah, and there's a whole, like, I'm pretty sure I don't know if it's a movie or television series, but there's definitely a book on it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I look like her, because I'm so featured, like, with my thin nose, like, I guess to like an Aussie, my lips are full, but not to, you know, bloody
not juju levels.
Yeah, not to Auntie Tussie over there, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm fine featured, so I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna look like this. Do you actually want to know something? I was scared that Ethan wouldn't find me sexually attractive.
Yeah, hard. I hear you.
And I haven't actually said that on social media, and it's something that I wanted to have a conversation about and open that space for other women to write in their weird fears.
So what was your fear? Like, what was it that you wouldn't be attractive, or that you like would have thoughts? Okay,
that he's on top of me, you know?
Yeah.
We're doing the deed. We're trying to make a baby, and I've got this tattoo on my face.
And it'd like put him
because
off?
It's not, yeah, because it's not this Western standard of beauty that we've been hounded into us, like that's been hounded into us. So that was a big release for me. And like, I've actually had to ask Ethan, do you still think I'm sexy? And I'm like, fuck, I sound like a dumb kind of asking that. Like, obviously he does. Like, he's still with me kind of thing. Like, and he didn't even blink a, or he didn't even, what's the saying? Bat an eyelid when I said I want my chin done. Like, he's like, okay. But do you know what I was thinking about the other day when I was driving? I was like, sorry, Gerhard, but like, there's nothing sexier than a man with his puhoro or mataora or pe'a or tawaka. I'm like, Ethan.
Baby, please.
Like, I don't want to force you, but baby. Like, get your tawaka. I'll give you 10 kids in 8 years. Like, honestly, like, it for me, like, as a woman, especially a woman who, like, wants our land back, like, it's total, like, a turn on to see a man being unapologetically indigenous. But I don't know why I was scared that Ethan wouldn't find me sexually attractive with Tātātau Kauwai.
I think you've like put the, what do you hit the nail on the head about the standard of beauty? Like, for me, when I got mine, I thought you'd look at me like you'd see one of my aunties or something, you know, because it's not like a norm where we are living, like we're in Brisbane. But like, what was it like for you?
I think for me, it was just like, you're a hard bitch, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, if you can give me babies,
yeah,
if you can get this tattooed on your face, I'm like, fuck, I'm a lucky guy.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
Because I don't have the same beauty standards as like,
yeah, yeah.
Because we get fed this shit, pornography, TV, social media,
magazine,
you know? Yeah. And it's not like you see Pacific Island women out there, but what I grew up with was what I saw, you know? And that's the kind of thing that I was attracted to. So when my wife decided to get it done, I was like, fucking go hard.
Yeah.
And I understand where the, why you'd be so worried about it. Because, like, I hear the comments when I was growing up, oh, why'd she do that to her face? Like, my auntie says the same thing. Bro, my auntie's
she
like,
said it to me last week. She was like, funny, oh, though.
Yeah.
Like, my auntie's,
but you're comfortable in it. So it's like, say, I don't really give a fuck. Yeah. Like
she's in her 90s, man.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, my God, girl. Where's my pretty girl gone?
Yeah.
You know? She's like, what did you do to your face?
And what does Mr. Pepelo say on Brotown? Oh, I've been sleeping on the oven, auntie. Sorry. So I got all these swirls on my face. Yeah.
Okay, this is gonna sound, I don't mean to be like disrespectful, but when I got mine, the obviously like the first thing I thought of was like, is it like bad if I like, you know, like suck his dick or something? Like, is that being,
yes, yes,
like I don't, I'm not saying this to be like disrespectful, but it was a thought, like, am I being disrespectful to my ancestors now? Yeah. Like, but these are
okay,
some things
we've got
to
remember. Okay, we've got to remember, and this is something that I've definitely walked through. So I don't. Maybe your mind's been here before as well. Our people were a sexual people. We're still here today. Obviously they were, you know. And like, think about our hula, our ura, our, what does Samoans do?
Siva.
Yeah, they didn't do siva with their all covered up like they do these days. Like, we had our titties out.
Yep.
We had our asses Tindua. Out. And like, it wasn't until the colonizer came over and said, oh, the wives were feeling a little uncomfortable that we were moving our shoulders and our arms too much, and we were moving our knees. So that's why we don't separate our knees too much and move and twist and turn our upper body as much as our tūpuna would have. And I say tūpuna because I mean like back then. Like, yeah. Although like, Tahitian and Cook Island, like Ura, is beautiful. How we see it today, it wasn't like that back in the day. I'm telling you right now, like, we would have been dancing around that fire butt naked, choosing who we wanted to have a bunny with to have our baby. Like, and like, I believe that there was marriage ceremonies and stuff like that. And I believe that, like what I feel and like the visions that that have been placed in me, especially when I do my artwork, that's definitely when I know it's a raw vision made of the past, perhaps, is that we used to hold these ceremonies so we could see, we could look, we could choose.
There's a reason for all of them. Like even like just with the pea and with the mokokowai, you're basically a female now. You can create babies. Yeah. You've had your period.
Yeah.
With this one, it's like you didn't die while you got it. So you can obviously make strong children. Like they're going to carry on.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays, you know, no one really dies all that often.
Yeah.
So it's a lot different.
Yeah. And that's something like I've even considered you in my journey, because I've always been quite sexually suppressive, like towards myself. Nobody's really done it to me. I mean, we have grown up around a bit of sexual abuse. Oh, I say a bit as in like quite a bit. And like I've never been sexually abused personally. But because we've always been around, I've always been very mindful. And like I'm gonna get pretty like into it. So we started at a born again Christian church because a lot of dad's friends he and family he grew up with in Wellington started a church. I won't say its name, but I remember one time it was like a youth type thing, and we had to sign this like contract to whoever the fuck
Jesus
maybe, so that I wouldn't masturbate or have sex before marriage. And the sex before marriage was a big one. Masturbate was like ever, like don't do it. And I think I was about 14 when I started masturbating, and I would wake after I would masturbate, I would cry and I would get up and I would wash my hands, like wash them, go back to bed, get up, I need to wash them again, I'm dirty. And then I would pray to God and I would ask for forgiveness. So that was my process until I was about 16, 17. And like mum and dad obviously never knew that. And like I've talked about that to mum now. And obviously I've talked about it to my partner, Ethan. But if you're a man, yes, women masturbate. that's right. It kind of looks like the chick on American Pie. Nah, just kidding. You know that scene when they got the camera? Nah, just kidding. But yeah, like I didn't realize how much of an effect that had on me until I was in a committed, wholesome relationship with my tane now, who I've been with for 5 years. At the end of next month. Oh, shit. At the end of this. In 7 days, it'll be 5 years. Fuck. Lucky I remember that. I need to put that down in my calendar. But, like, it's come up where, like, it's kind of, it manifested into I'm not allowed to feel pleasure. So as long as he feels pleasure, I don't have to feel the guilt of feeling pleasure. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And it's like I've done a lot of overcoming with that, and perhaps that's why that mamai has come up with wearing my facial marking of like, is he going to find me sexually attractive? Do you know what I mean? Like it's like somehow, I mean, I'll get to the bottom of it because I'll keep thinking about it. I'm like you, like once something's on my mind, I've got to crack it. Mm. Like I've got to get the code and the combination and crack it and like compress it into a sentence that I understand, where I can go, okay, I understand that now. It means this. I'll put that away, kind of thing. Like that's how my brain works. So like, I'll get the attachment soon enough. But like, yeah, that's a massive thing. And I reckon, yeah, that's definitely got something to do as to why I, second guessed whether, and perhaps, you know, the whole, can I like go down on my partner now that I have kowai? That sounds colonized, doesn't it? Or is my partner gonna find me sexually attractive with kowai? That's colonized, because we've been raised Christian or not, the the basis of every Western civilization is based on Christianity. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So like it's there, whether you can see it or not, whether it's like in your household or not, it's in the laws we abide by. So it's kind of like, can't really get away from it, can we? Mm. And that's obviously, it seeps out in these most unexpected, obscure ways. Yeah.
I think when I received mine, like on social media, and I was quite a like sexually expressive person. I talked about sex quite a lot, like embodiment. I expressed my body very, very openly. Once I received my kowai, it started to like create retract. Some sort of self-doubt in me. Because I was like, is a Māori wahine who wears kowai allowed to express her body in this way?
Yeah.
No one ever told me that. This was just like my own understanding. But I'm grateful for it because it actually made me pause, look back, discover who the fuck our people were, how they held themselves, and then I embodied that part of me. So I think even receiving my kowai, like sunk in a bit deeper into myself. You like, just sit the fuck down and you're like, it's all good.
Yeah. I heard from my good friend that the Māori used to get together, have mass orgies. I'm like, yeah. Personally, I say yeah, but like, I'm so monogamous. Like,
hold the camera, guys.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, cool. Like, that's what we come from. Like, and it's like, we're holding this shame for like holding ourselves a certain way. And our 2.0,
when it's like a normal, natural,
each other's wives kind of thing. Like.
Yeah. But it's like a normal, natural thing for our bodies, like human bodies to be doing. But like anything, it's deconditioning. And I think that's the whole around colonization. It's just understanding it for yourself first before you start stepping out onto the streets or on social media and then speaking on behalf of the collective when you have no idea where the fuck it hits, like the mama in yourself. It's like, I understand it. I get it. We need it. But bro, like sit down, it's okay. We've got fucking heaps of time to figure it out. Like,
And if you concentrate on your mahi as an Indigenous person, that will never be taken. But it's being taken when you're putting too much energy and fighting for it. Mm. Just do the mahi and do it with love and do it with intent. And what you do will never ever be cheapened or brung down or stolen again.
I think with those kind of people that go out and fight these wars on social media with these, you know, from different countries and everything, they're trying to argue with this person, they're trying to like protest for someone living in Africa and stuff like that. I find it doesn't resonate with me because like, how are you supposed to relate that to your normal life? It's like, if you're actually going to be making these changes inside yourself, as much as you want to post this shit up on social media, it's like, how are you treating the dude next to you? How are you treating the other Samoans on the street?
They're probably posting it while they're eating smashed avo on toast for $25 with their like $6 coffee. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's so funny you say that actually, because I stayed up with a cousin that I hadn't connected with since I was like way younger. Her name's Sky and she is amazing. She runs this equine like therapy. Like, so she does therapy with her horses, right? Mm. And I actually jumped on the old horsey yesterday. And oi, my thighs and puku, like, like.
Second.
No, but I actually used to, fun fact, I used to do horse riding lessons in Wainui because Wainui's like tucked around the back. It's like farmland and quite a few people, have horses and whatnot. And, we used to go out the back and and learn how to ride horses. So I hadn't actually been on a horse for a good, like, 18 years, 19 years maybe around then. And what I was thinking with these horses is, like, we talk so much about surrender, babe. Like, sis, surrender. Like, it's so beautiful and we don't talk this way. It's like, let's surrender when you're in front of, like, a 700-kilo animal and you've got to ride him. Mm. And, let's talk about surrender then. And it was a big, like, it was a massive thing for me, like, to be out. We weren't on, like, out in the WOP, like, in the country, but, like, we were on big property and we would have to drive down about 7 to 10 minutes in the car to go see the horses, saddle them up and everything like that. I took one for a trail ride and this horse was so big. Like, me standing up, I'm 176 centimeters, right? So about, like, 150 centimeters taller than you, Ness.
Yeah.
You're no, beast next to me. Oi, this horse was like, its back was like the same height, like this horse was massive, like huge. It was gigantic. Like I had to get a big box to step up onto just so I could put my foot into the stirrup and put my big ass body over it. And it's just like all these people talking about like recycle, compost and all that stuff. And it's like, you live in a city. Like it just put it into perspective for me, being out there using tank water, being mindful, like, no, you literally have to have like a 2 minute shower because like you won't be able to have a shower tomorrow. Like they're going out the back, you know, oh, cuz, do you want a peppermint tea? Oh yeah, yeah, sweet as. Not, where do you have it in the pantry? Oh, I'll go and pick some leaves from the garden so I can put it in our teapot. Like living like that, I'm like, fuck, this is pretty cool. And my daughter, she was so happy, like playing, eating the rocks. Oh, I'm letting her eat the rock. She's all right. Walking around with no nappy on, like, you know, just having fun, like being on Whenua. And yeah, it's like you think about all the shit that people advocate for in their safe city homes. Mm. Like, Michelle, you're a suburban housewife, you know?
I'm so sorry, but they pulled their dog over and Maxie did this to me.
Okay.
And he got really angry and then he was having a little face-off
he's
with your dog.
He's pissing everyone.
Okay.
And he might eat whoever's dog came over, so.
Maxie won't eat.
Okay.
Just chuck him in the room.
There's a cat-dog fight, peoples.
Now we're leaving him in.
All right, can you close the door and then we come? Yeah, we finish soon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, sis, you're sitting in your comfortable suburban home. It's really, really easy for you to talk about these things. Mm. Yeah. So just a big, like, what going off the back of what you were saying, like, it's easy to talk about, like, you know, Black Lives Matter. Well, you know, there's, like, Black Lives in custody here in Australia that
on
are,
your
like,
street.
That we're, like, losing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that in, like, I remember I was with this white boy. And an Indigenous man come to the house, knocked on the door, and he asked for a drink. My ex-boyfriend's dad sent him around the back of the house and made him drink out of the hose. Mm. Yeah, and it's like, nah, I don't trust them because they come and they look in the house and then they come back and steal. And it's like, you know, I'm like, I'm brown, eh? Like, you know, my dad, like, is brown, you know? And it, like, from there I was like, nah, I'm different. I can't be with a white boy. Yeah, not saying all white boys are like that, but like they are. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, people find it so easy to just like talk from their soapbox and type it on their Instagram. And it's like, and like, oh, I do that too. Don't get me wrong, but it's, yeah, it's just a realization. Like I'm calling myself out here as well because it's like, it's easy to talk about, oh, health and fitness lifestyle. And it's like, oh, fuck me. Like, we live the most convenient life here in the city and in the suburbs.
So
like,
soft.
What do we got to complain about? Like, shut up.
It's like, I'll never talk about health because I smoke cigarettes. It's like, cool, I'll talk about other shit. Like,
but it's like, like you can't really appreciate something until it's taken away.
Yeah.
So when you live in this kind of lifestyle, you look like a massive dickhead when you're trying to preach to people about how to live. You're driving your fucking fancy ass car around. You're having Uber Eats delivered to your house.
Yeah. You're drinking your $5 coffees. And it's like, just be mindful what you're saying because like you're privileged now. Like you're privileged now. So just like,
when I used to see like all this shit coming across social media, I'd see these people posting it. And in my head, I'd be like, you wouldn't fucking piss on this cunt if he was on fire. But you're willing to share this Black Lives Matter stuff. You're willing to fucking post something out, but you wouldn't even talk to the local homeless cunt.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, the guy that works at the shop, you give them like the side eye and stuff. Mm. It's so weird. Except it's weird how it's so acceptable.
Yeah, and you treat your
detached
baby mama like shit. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, ugh. Whatever.
We're so detached from everything.
Yeah.
You know? But we think that we can have an opinion on it. And it's not until some OG comes and slaps you and goes, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, like, yeah. And that's why, like, you know, I have my ups and downs with my mum, you know, but, like, I consider what the fuck she went through. Mm. And, like, bro, she found my dad hanging and she was 27 years old and she had us 4 kids. Like, I'm never, ever going to question my mum's craziness. Like, if that means I got, like I said, like, change the way I am so my mom's happy, like just for when I'm around her, sorry if you're listening to this, Mum. But like, I do it because I love you, and like, you deserve a break. Like, fuck, you've lived through some shit. Like the shit my mum's lived through. Like, fuck, she grew up being like fucking drive-by shootings on her house and shit. It's like, no, you're crazy, man. Like, cool.
It's like, I'm just understanding.
Yeah.
Yo, mean chat. We probably have to split this into two parts, eh?
Yeah, I reckon too.
Shut up.
Yeah, yeah. How long were we talking shit for? Hey.
Yeah, I thought that's not too long. That's awesome. Yeah. Wow. Man, appreciate you. I love you. I love you. Yeah, get back on soon.
Yeah, yes, please. Oh, I feel like, I don't know. I just, yeah, pretty much I love you too. Yeah. And I love you too. And I love your better. Oh, whoa. Oh, where's my man? No, it's cool to meet like-minded people, and like, no one at this table's perfect. Like, we're close to it, but we're not perfect.
Thank you.
And we are just, yeah, good people, good normal suburban people living our good normal suburban privileged life, aren't we? At the end of the day, and we're just trying to do our thing, raise our kids, and be good people, and
poor money mindset.
Yeah, what's that? That's the poverty mindset.
Sounds like us. No,
Right. But honestly, if you're medium, give me the loader number.
Shout Haley.
Yeah,
thank you.
Oh, shout out to Haley. Yeah.